It should be on the tape by now. You mentioned Ockie McBean that I remembered as ordering shoestring potatoes at the Green Lantern Hotel when we used to finally pack up drinking around 2 o'clock, and that's all I remember of him. What do you remember of him?
Well, I can't remember, as I say, that I'm an old man and I got a 10-second memory, but I remember one day being told about Ockie, that he was on an eastbound convoy. And apropos of this fifth column business, that there was a bloody tanker. And you remember the tankers, they were always right bang in the middle of the convoy.
Yeah.
You remember, because they were the most precious ones, and all the rest of the aircraft and locomotives and all the rest of them, they were scattered around the outside. And there was a fifth columnist on this bloody tanker in this convoy that Ockie was supposed to have been escorting. I don't know what ship he was in at the time. But this fifth columnist got a hold of this old man on the tanker, and believe it or not, not the fact that he killed the old man, that doesn't mean a thing, but he killed the old man in his bunk, and he locked the door, and he went out, this fifth columnist did, and he got a flock of kerosene, and he went back to the old man's cabin and opened up, and he soaked the body in kerosene and spread it all over the carpet and the bunk and everything else, and then he set fire to the doggone thing, and then he jumped out and locked the door, and then he beat it in the tanker, you see. Well, of course, the heat sensor went up on the bridge, you know, saying, you know, there's a fire in the engine room, or there's a fire here, a fire there, fire in the old man's cabin. And they came down, and they couldn't get in, and so they broke the door down, and by this time, everything was destroyed inside there, and the old man was frazzled in his bunk. And so the chief officer, then he becomes the captain of the tanker. They got the fire out. But could you imagine a doggone setting fire to a bloody tanker? If you're still aboard the damn
thing? It seems to me, though, that if he was a fifth columnist, he could have set the fire in a better place.
Well, I guess he could have. But imagine that what I was saying was, imagine if the darn thing had got out of control.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. So anyway, the chief officer reported to the Commodore of the convoy and told him what had happened. And he said, I'm taking command.
Yeah.
And so the Commodore said, okay. And then the Commodore told the senior off the escort, whoever the hell it was, who said, look, send an officer over there to find out what in the name of hell's going on in that bloody tanker and see if the chief officer wants any help. So they sent over Ockie McBean. And they sent him over in a bloody whaler. And so this yarn goes anyway. And they got him over there, and Ockie went aboard, and so he climbed up this bloody ladder and over the rail in his bloody uniform, looking very officious. And the chief officer met him, and he said, now, just a second, don't say a word, and all these ding-a-lings around here, they're all listening. He said, come on up here. And so he took him someplace and took him into his own cabin and told him what the hell had happened, you see. So Ockie said, well, what are we going to do? And he said, you'll have to... So the chief officer said, well, he said, there's nothing we can do with the body. We haven't got a refrigerator big enough, you know, to put him in.
Yeah.
And he said, so Ockie said, well, I'll tell you what we'll do. He said, we'll give him, he's a seaman, he's a captain, he's been at life all, been at sea all his life. We'll give him a real proper burial at sea. So they wrapped this poor old man up, what was left of him, and they put him on planks and wrapped him, they slipped him over the side. And of course, when the ship got into Liverpool or wherever the hell it was headed for, the people came down to investigate the doggone thing, and they said, well, where's the body? And Ockie said, we gave him a burial at sea. And he said, you stupid oaf, he said, you destroyed all the evidence. So that was the end of that. I really don't know the legality thing, whether they could ever arrest the guy. They didn't know who the deuce they
had. Who it was anyway.
Yeah.
You had heard these rumors, and those are two things you remember in particular.
Well, you know what the hell. But I often used to think, I said, thank God that there were some of them had a sense of humor, Harold. You would have gone nuts.
Oh, yeah.
You really would have.
Well, a lot of us did.
And crying out
although
loud.
Although perhaps not certifiable, it was evident in other ways.
Yeah. Because one night we were in Londonderry, and I remember C3, Commander Medley, who was RN, And this would be about 44, I guess, yeah. And he said that all first lieutenants, upon arrival, all first lieutenants, commanding officers and first lieutenants will appear in the wardroom of this bloody ship, I can't remember the name of it right now, and at 8 o'clock tonight. And I thought to myself, what the hell, this is a very unusual thing. So we all went over there, and I think either, I think it was Howard Quinn had been gone to refit, and there were just Starchy and I left of the old school of the C3. We were just two of the old-timers, and little Jackie Pickford came along and picked two.
Yeah.
And, of course, we didn't know at the time why he had joined us.
I'll just put in that that's Admiral Pickford.
Yeah.
Retired,
yeah.
Yes.
And little Jackie came along, and so Commander Medley, when we got to this cocktail party, he allowed everybody to get properly lubricated for about a half an hour, you see, and then he said, "Gentlemen, I will tell you now why I brought you together here, because PICTU has been assigned to a very special job, and we are going to say goodbye to PICTU tonight because she's going to slip early tomorrow morning."
This is the Corvette.
The Corvette PICTU, yeah. Yeah. And so he said she's going, this is before D-Day, of course.
Yeah.
And we didn't know what the hell it was.
Yeah.
But he said this is before D-Day, and he said, I'm sure Pickford and PICTU will carry themselves off with dignity, and we will remember him after this conflict that he's going off to do, and when he will be decorated. And then he said, posthumously, like that. And little Jackie, it should have said his eyebrows. He said, who me, like this.
Yeah. Well, yeah. What was it, do you know?
It was D-Day, prior to D-Day.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, but we didn't know it at the time.
No, I see.
Yeah. And he said, you know,
he didn't expect him to come back.
Yeah, yeah. Posthumously. Poor little
Jackie. It's a nice farewell party.
Yeah. Yeah, but God, he was a grand fellow, that Medley.
Oh, yes.
Oh, God, what a...
Yeah.
He had a fellow by the name of Stamp, Lieutenant... No, wait a minute. No, I'm sorry, it was Taylor, I was saying. It was that preceded him was C3. He was an Aussie. He was a senior officer of an escort.
What's his name then?
Stamp.
S-T-A-M-P.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're talking about Stamp now?
Yeah, no. And he had Burnham. I think he had Burnham before Medley did.
Yeah.
And he had a fellow who was a
two. Burnham is the ship's name, yeah.
Yeah. And he, this old Stamp, he was an NR, and he was a, I'm sorry, Taylor was the NR. And he was, he'd been to sea, oh, he was an old man then, you see, and he was, he loved his little nip. And he went off down to London, and Stamp knew where he was staying. This was his first lieutenant, and Stamp lived somewhere up near Crewe, and they say that Taylor was, he was a rowdy old guy, and so Stamp called Taylor in London and said, "Look, when you're coming back, we want you to stop off. Just come and stay at the house all night with us," you see. The old man, Taylor, said, oh, geez, he was obligated to do so. And she said, all right, I'll come up. So he got there, and his little, Stamp's little daughter was about 11 years old, and she was having a birthday party. And they said that Taylor showed up there, and he was scowling at all these bloody children. And Lieutenant Commander Stamp said, now, dear, and Mrs. Stamp brought in the birthday cake with these 11 little candles on. And so they said that, now, Jennifer, dear, you must make a wish and then blow out all the candles. And so Jennifer said, all right now. Oh, Mommy, I've made my wish. No, don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody, you see. So she took a deep breath and she went, like this, you see. And she blew out about 6 out of the 11 candles, you see. And they said, oh, you don't get your wish. So they said they were brought over. The most senior one there was old Captain Taylor. And they said, now, you must blow out the rest of the candles after you've made a wish, you see. So they say Commander Taylor came over and he went like this, and the other 6 all ignited, they said.
Well, with the power of some of the stuff we were drinking, I can believe it. Well, did I ask you way back what you thought about having to sign on for the Far East again?
Yeah.
I did.
And I was the last one to sign. Yeah. Yeah. That was bloody disgraceful.
Just a disgrace. Yeah.
Just dug at me. Really, it was. That was an awful, shocking, bloody thing.
Well,
shocking thing.
It was really an example of the NRs, not the NRs, the politicians, yeah, interfering with the Navy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Whatever their reasons were. I think their reasons are probably good. Mackenzie King was trying to keep Canada together.
Oh, yeah.
This was one of the ways, but it didn't strike us that way.
No. I never knew before that you told me that the Ontario had been taken back to Vancouver.
She had to return to Vancouver.
Yeah, I never heard that.
Yeah.
Because, you see, I don't know where the devil I was then. Yeah. Well, I guess I was. It was Newfoundland. Yeah.
Well, Dr. Douglas particularly wants information on that, and I'm trying to find people that were in her at the time, and I've got some of them lined up through Petty Officer Rimmer, who was a shipmate of mine. He's now president of the Chief and Petty Officers Club.
Oh, really?
They're all retired,
and
he's got contact with everybody, and he's lining me up a few.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably think of 20 things tonight.
Well, we can always come back and do another tape, but... Well, Jim, at least for the time being, we've come to the end of a very successful tape and a very interesting career. Tell me, if you had to do it all again, would you do it?
You're bloody right.
Yeah.
Would I ever? Yeah.
Thank you. If Dr. Douglas has any further questions, may I come back to you for elucidation on an amplification on various points?
If I'm still alive, yeah.
Well, you'll be here for many years yet, I'm sure. Thank you, Foghorn. Hey, why did you get the? How did you get the nickname Foghorn Davis?
Oh, crying out loud. I don't know. Oh, yeah. It was out here in 40, and I don't know what... And I remember it was little wee Russell Sad. Do you remember him? Little Russ said he was a four-ring captain of Niobe.
Yeah.
And he, he was the greatest little guy. And he and old Tom.
How do you spell his name then?
S-A-D-D.
Yeah.
F-R.
F-R-S-A-D-D. F-R Sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Frederick Russell Sad. And he was, he was the greatest little guy you've ever seen.
And he was the first captain of Niobe?
He was an engineer.
Not,
he was
not
a four.
No,
he wasn't executive. He was an engineer. Pardon me.
In the cruiser Niobe?
No, over in the Scotland.
Oh, yeah.
The shore base, yeah.
All right, I don't know.
Well, he and Tom Ramsey and I used to, they were on.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, that was all. And I just used to say, I used to imitate Race Rocks by going, oh, like this, you know. And he said, there was old Foghorn going at it again, you know.
Because I heard the story of how you got the nickname, that one night your captain was making a landfall in fog, and you had no radar. And he was saying, can anybody hear anything? Can anybody hear anything? And you went to the starboard after end of the bridge and went, wah, wah. And he said, there, off the starboard bow. And nobody could hear anything. And then you went to the port after end and went, wah, wah. He said, it's over there now. Can anybody hear anything? And nobody could. Everybody knew it was you. And I heard that. Is that true?
I don't think so. No. I think that's one of those stories again.
Well,
that's a wardroom story.
Well, yeah. I think I'll pretend you never told me that. It was not true. James, thank you very much. Foghorn, thank you very much indeed.